Mark, O mighty one, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
To Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
We have a very special and overdue guest for the show. To some, he may be just a mysterious name on the credits page of your DCC RPG core book, or even a guitar-wielding pirate. But we know him as the original embodiment of Hugh Heftblade and the author of the fantastic funnel Not in Kansas Anymore. That's right, the elusive Dieter Zimmerman has been summoned. We'll talk about dragon mech, DCC backstory, crazy photo shoots, music, and more. I'm Judge Jen, and with me tonight are Judge Jeff.
Hi, Jen.
And Judge Julian.
Hello.
And our special guest, Dieter Zimmerman.
Hello, people.
Well, that's what I'm about to ask y'all. We're just going to head straight into the tavern.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern talk.
So, Dieter, what's going on with you lately? Any gaming?
Yeah, actually, I've been doing a lot of gaming. Not much DCC, sadly, but a lot of 5e. I'm in three weekly games right now, I think.
Wow.
All online.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah, well, I was out of a job for a while, so I had plenty of free time. And now I'm back at my job, but still trying to maintain these games. So.
Awesome. What about you, Jeff?
Well, I am as stupid busy as usual and still using my two weekly games as my one outlet for my sanity. I am still running my quote-unquote old school adventures game. It's really not old school adventures. It's for just rolling D20s. Tim Deshane has joined the crew. So that's fun having a DCC buddy there. And also my friend Josh, who was at my very first Dungeons & Dragons game when I was 10 years old. Wow. He is also in our group now. So it's very fun having all these different worlds colliding. And for those of you who have watched Blades Against Bandwidth and are familiar with my character on there, Forrester Longbranch, I also had Forrester Longbranch make an appearance. It's a slightly deranged and exaggerated version of Forrester Longbranch has made a cameo appearance in my OSC campaign. So that's kind of fun. And speaking of Blades Against Bandwidth, I'm still doing that as well. That's the game that Brendan runs over on Twitch on Sunday evenings from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. EST. If you feel like swinging by and checking out some good DCC gaming.
I played in that once. It was fun.
All three of you have.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the gaming that I've been up to.
And Julian.
I had an epic Bride of Cyclops con. I ran six games. And was pretty tired after that, but really had a blast. I think they all went pretty well. Did a lot of playtesting for one of my new things, as well as a Stephen Newton production, which is coming out. And that was a lot of fun. So Steve and I did our little prisoner exchange thing, which we've done a couple times. And this time, both of them were playtests. So it was really fun. And I will say, Jen, of course, can I steal this from you, Jen? Because I didn't know if you were going to talk about it, but
sure.
Jen got to play in Steven's playtest of one of my games, which has been really funny because, I got great feedback, you know, from everybody about the game. But second of all, I can see how Steven, like, based on the feedback they're giving me, I can see how Steven ran it, like, totally differently than, which is really funny to, like, hear third hand from people. So that's actually just kind of funny. And I've actually never played in a Stephen Newton game. So that seems weird. But one of these days.
It gives you an idea of how other judges are going to take and interpret your work.
Well, they're not. Yeah,
that's why playtesting is important.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. And but of course, Steven probably he puts a little more Steven-ness on it, but which is, you know, anyway. So it's very fun. it's fun both as a not only as a writer who's trying to figure out how GMs are going to run with it, but also as a judge to see how judges do stuff. You know, just generally, it's fun to see that. And looking at running some Gamehole Con stuff coming up here in a few days, I guess weekend after next, and then doing some non-DCC stuff for RPG Alliance the weekend before Thanksgiving. I'm going to put some totally different games out there just for fun and run some Knave and some Gumshoe stuff and, I don't know, maybe one other thing. So looking forward to going a little nuts and breaking out of the mold and just getting...
What is Knave? I don't know that one.
Knave is like a four-page classless game, kind of OSR-ish, a little bit Black Hack, like where you everything's kind of a roll-under type thing. But it's like one of those super simple, light micro games that's just, okay, it's four pages long, you have stats, go and play the game now, you know, type things.
Cool. So,
yeah, it should be good times.
I have a question about gaming conventions. So I'm actually going to go from being stupid busy to having way too much free time from December 5th to January 9th between my two semesters. Do you guys have any idea of any cool gaming conventions that are happening during that time?
Possibly Dragon Meet. I think that's the first or second weekend of December.
Okay.
And I think they're expanding it to 2 days, maybe three, because it's going to be online this time. Usually it's a single day in the UK. And I'm looking at EverCon, which I believe is the first weekend of January.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they moved that online as well.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And there's JeffCon.
There's JeffCon, exactly, which I will be doing for all 4 weeks.
Yeah, and well, the one I was thinking the one you're going to organize for us.
I mean, I'm playing in every game. So.
There you go. I'll stop by JeffCon if you put that together.
All right, Julian, I'll be happy to sell you a platinum badge.
All right. We can deal on that
for the low price of half your soul.
So, Jen, what kind of gaming have you been doing?
You know, I signed up for Bride of Cyclops Con specifically to play stuff because Joseph basically said, you've done a lot, take a breather. And so I ended up volunteering for a few things. And before I knew it, my entire 3.5 days was completely booked again. Whoopsie. But yeah, I got to play in Steven's take on Julian's game. I got to play in one, the Funnel Grinder, I don't remember what the heck it was called, from Ariel Churi. I got to play a really obscure one from Daniel Bishop, the Black Feather Blade that Jeff Seifert ran. I'm trying to remember everything that was... Wow, there was a lot, man. And I assisted Harley with his Slave Pits of Lost Agarda Battle Royale, which was two different sessions. And basically for each group of 20 people, only six got to be in the arena at once. So I was helping to send them the link to the Roll 20 page so that they could flow in a little bit more seamless fashion. Otherwise it would have taken, you know, forever and a year for Harley to be clicking everywhere and dealing with every single thing. So I was like, yay, I get to be admin. This is totally my jam since I don't get to work at the booth this year. I'm still maintaining the weekly games. We've got Shutter Mountains that I'm just a player in. Looks like we're going to start up a Vason game on a, I guess, every other week kind of basis. So that'll be kind of fun. That's with some of the Warcrawl crew. This past week I was on Brendan's game therapy in the Lankmar setting, and it was kind of bittersweet because it was the last week that Bruce is going to be a part of it for a while because he's moving on to, well, you know, real life and stuff. Other big news, we've already got Spawn of Cyclops Con announced for all things DCC. That'll be February 26th through 28th. And some of my favorite bit of news from the AMAs that were going on over the weekend was that we will eventually get a fully compiled book for Peril on the Purple Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did for the Chain Coffin setting and all of the
not
extra
surprising,
bits and pieces.
Not surprising, but I hadn't heard that yet, but not surprising.
Well, yeah. I think it was Pierre who had written us in about buying the box set, which is going crazy on eBay and stuff.
Yeah, I'm tempted to sell mine.
Someone just posted on Facebook today that something was going for $225 on eBay.
Get it now. Get
for
it
one
now
of
before
the books.
Spellburn. Yeah. Wow.
So
I mean, don't get it now. Wait till I put mine online,
right.
And then.
Well, now you got the insider trading, Dieter. You can drop it, put it on eBay before this goes live in 2 weeks.
There's currently somebody on eBay selling it for $199.
Nice.
$199.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
So, Jen,
crazy,
two questions.
Crazy stuff, sir.
What's Vason?
Vason was put out. I think it's by Free League, and it's originally all about like Nordic fairy tales.
Oh.
And Mr. Curtis is putting a New England spin on it.
Right.
So it won't be Lovecraftian, but it'll still be right up his alley. So
got it.
I was like, hell yeah, I will join this.
Right. And second question for you, can you give us like the 20-second rundown of the Lost Slave Pits of Agarda or whatever? Kind of tournament-ish thing.
Yeah. It was a battle royale sort of thing. You try to survive. Well, you come in on a lower level of this pyramid. For lack of better words, some might call it a ziggurat.
Some would definitely not call it a ziggurat.
You know, it was really interesting to do the playtesting in the very first iteration. You were actually a group of 4 zero-level characters. And we realized really quickly that was going to stalemate because you've got the 4 characters. So it evolved into you come in with 1 character. And, yeah, everyone's got the same stats except for hit points. When you come in, Harley's going to ask, are you a cannibal? Yes or no? And if so, you get an extra, like, 4 hit points or something. Because.
Yeah.
You start off coming off these slave ships and trying to survive the longest amidst everybody else there.
Hmm.
Things will happen, like the wine dark seas will rise. Everybody who's not in the arena at that time, after each round, they get to vote on the fate of everybody else. So I was running the Zoom polls of, do we release the man bats? Do we set the cannibals free? How are we doing this?
Wow. This has a very, I was thinking this was like a, the old Spell Duel tournament he ran at Gen Con, but it sounds more like a Doug Con thing. It sounds more like a Gen Con at the Embassy Suites night.
I would marry the two. Yeah, I would blend those two. Once we got into it, it was happening so quickly and frenetically. And, this person's dead. So, okay, here's your character. You go in. You're next. And so we had people just coming in and out of Roll 20 so quickly. At one point, we broke the damn game. Harley had this equipment deck all put together, and all of a sudden, 54 face cards go just spraying all over the board. It was a comedy of errors at that point, and everybody loved it because, Harley, he's just going to run with it.
Yeah, right. Oh, that sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it was a little bit of hard work, but it was absolutely a thrill to be anywhere near it. So, yeah.
Lightning poll. Judge Jeff, are you a cannibal?
No.
Judge Jen, are you a cannibal?
I'm opportunistic, so yes.
Judge Dieter.
I'm going to go with, if you put it in front of me, I'll eat it.
Oh, good one. Yeah. I'm not a cannibal, but I drink blood. So, I don't know. People can send in their own rules interpretation.
Am okay. I a cannibal if I eat cannibals?
A meta cannibal at that point.
Wow.
I'm a meta cannibal.
Y'all are silly. All right. And with that, let's kick some email out here so that we can maybe have a few fewer email shows, maybe?
I call upon the flame to summon you.
Who'll deliver the message for me?
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
Okay, Julian, our mailbag's getting a little bit full. We're a couple months backlogged again.
I should have sent in an email before I was on the show so that you could answer my email while I'm on the show. That would have been brilliant, but I didn't think of it.
You would have needed to have emailed it to us in June.
Yeah.
I didn't have any questions in June.
You always have questions.
All right. Here we go. Our first one out of the mailbag is from one of my oldest friends in the world, Judge Gary of the Minneapolis DCC Society. The Minneapolis DCC RPG Society. Hi, Burners. Just popping in to drop a note regarding playing different races/cultures in games. If you haven't already, you should buy the RPG book Harlem Unbound by Chris Spivey. No, it is not a DCC book. It's a Call of Cthulhu book, but it tackles some of the issues of playing different cultures in it and how to handle that. The setting for the game is Harlem, and the players are assumed to be people of color from the era of the Harlem Renaissance. There is a lot of good stuff in the book. Chris Spivey is an amazing writer. We should all be buying all of his books, but I wanted to leave an excerpt from it that really resonated with me. From the section on cultural considerations, and this is the quote from the book. When playing someone of a different race, there must be sensitivity to avoid any form of cultural appropriation. It is possible to honor and interact with the culture on more than just an aesthetic level. Blackface, just don't. Don't try to talk with a black accent. Don't try to have black mannerisms or fall into any of the countless stereotypes. This is a key thing for any keeper to convey once you have crafted your scenario. End of the quote. There's a lot more, but I think that paragraph speaks to what Judge Jeff was saying. Just play your character like a human being. Keep up the good work. Game on, Judge Gary. And that was in response to a long thing we had about that, and I feel like it started with talking about playing elves and stuff, but it got more serious than that, but I don't recall exactly.
I feel like it came from Judge Troyer asking about Dark Trails.
Wow, I don't know. I've lost the thread.
It was okay, so we're back in June. It was around the time that all of that came up with the orcs being likened to different cultures.
Yes, you're exactly right. It was all the orc shenanigans on the social medias. Yes, that's exactly
so
right.
So I would say Mr. Spivey is onto something there.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess we don't have any other hearty, chewy feedback on that one. So maybe the next one?
All right. So we have an email from Randall. Hello, I am a relatively new convert to Dungeon Crawl Classics and value inclusivity in my tabletop role-playing games and just about everywhere else, too. DCC appears to have done well in its depiction of people of color in its books, as well as having a relatively high number of female main characters that often avoid unfortunate fantasy tropes around female armor. However, one area that I haven't come across in my readings is depiction of queerness. Are there any LGBTQ+ characters in DCC material, and what are your thoughts on this? Thank you, and look forward to continuing to listen to the podcast, Randall. Excuse me. I would start by saying I'm not aware of any, but I would also add that the way DCC adventures are generally written, they're not super NPC heavy. And usually the NPCs that we see, well, there are plenty of exceptions, but usually they're the villains. And personally, I feel like we have enough queer-coded villains from just Disney movies. So what I'm more interested in is seeing queer heroes. Wow. And, you know, and I agree, like, I don't really feel like we see a lot of that in DCC, but I also don't feel like, I feel like in DCC, you are the heroes. But it would be fun to kind of see a little bit more of that, if not expressed explicitly, at least maybe implied through artwork.
Well, yeah, I feel like some members of the band may or may not be queer, but only Doug knows for sure, so.
True. I will. There is a if I remember correctly, and I understood it correctly, there is a. I mean, this is pretty obscure, but I believe there is a lesbian couple in that are the NPCs in Creeps Greg Creep that are part of the conspiracy that kicks off all the madness. It's a right. very. It's not. They just happen to be like a couple, so it's not like a big deal, and it's not part of the story or whatever. But at some point, you notice that they're lovers and they're both women or something, and you're like,
oh. And that's how it should be. I right. mean, I think yeah. if you're going to include that kind of stuff in here, just do it casually.
There's no need to make a big deal and call it out.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's literally a blink and you. And first of all, it's kind of a blink and miss it if you're reading it, but if you're. It might not even ever come up if you're running it and playing it, right? Because you might not get into the lives of those NPCs in the slightest, right? But
yeah.
But I mean, like, why not? You know, I mean, that was real. So obviously.
I will say the one very notable exception is if you play Dragora's Dungeon at my table, because that's Dragora's Dungeon. Yes. And he is a very scantily clad, very powerful lady man. And I love Dragor.
I'm picturing like Borat via Boris Vallejo kind of treatment, you know?
Exactly. And every time you hit him with one of your weapons, another piece of his armor falls off.
Right.
It doesn't Whoopsie. Change his armor class, but...
Of course not. I would also add, there are a couple of modules like the Balance Blade, where the issue of a succubus comes up, or this is the kind of thing that you see. I would just say, you know, if you know your players well enough, maybe play to their interests. That's going to vary. You're not going to do that at a con game with a table full of strangers. So maybe be a little wary of things like that, too, if you're running at a con. All right. Looks like one more here. Comes from Nacho. Hey, Triple J's. Judge Nacho here, a.k.a. Wasan of the Eastern Lands, a.k.a. Grubby the Cut Purse, for those of you in the cast who don't know what I'm talking about. It's been 7 years since my last email, apparently. Bet you don't remember that one. I will interject at this point for Nacho's benefit. It was before my time, but I tracked it down to episode 10, Holier Than Thou, the Cleric episode, which aired wow. in September of 2013.
Wow, that was a deep cut.
Yeah, that was a deep dive. Yeah. All right, Nacho has a statement, a rant, and a question for us. Statement, super fan of the podcast, chemistry and energy you put into it. Keep them coming. Thanks so much for all this content and work. Rant, as a Spanish DCC fan, just a very brief summary of what goes on here. Clásicos del Masmorreo has a small and devoted community and is a very loved game by virtually everyone. Publisher Other Selves has put great love into the translations and supplements they've been producing. Check out the Phlogiston books, volumes 1 and 2, and the Vertical Halls, also in English. Funny enough, Old School here means RuneQuest, Call of Cthulhu, and Middle-earth role-playing, but DCC has really been love at first sight for many, even without the same common cultural grounds as American fans. Few of us actually started with D&D basically by exposure to the English versions, as we only got the basic Mensur set in a horrible edition. We would have to wait for AD&D second ed to get that ball rolling in Spain. Finally, an out of the blue question. How do you guys roleplay villains that are supposed to be much smarter than you are as a person? In my case, say, int is less than 10, let alone 18. How do I thwart my players with wit and cunning, which I absolutely lack, without resorting to sheer firepower? I mean, getting a Lex Luthor type of noble or magician to work as a nemesis. Thanks for your time, Nacho. All right, guys, take it away.
Well, there are no villains who are actually smarter than I am, so I don't have that problem. I don't know.
Dieter, the one thing I hate about you is how humble you are.
Right?
It's
a character flaw. It's a character flaw. No, that's actually a really tricky question, and I have to think about that for a minute.
I think it's a lot like being a player who's supposed to be very smart. I'm like, I don't have an int above So I don't get a
if you're a player, your judge might feed you information because your character is smart. But if you're the judge, it's harder. Yeah.
So to be fair to Nacho, he said int greater than 10, not less than 10. But as we want to.
You know. I can't read mouth symbols today. I apologize.
He's a smart dude. In fact, he was playtesting with me, a bride, and put on a terrific show, playing a wizard with not the optimal spells and still just put on a clinic. It was super fun. So thanks, Nacho. That was cool. Dieter, you stole my line totally.
yeah. So, I mean, you can be as intelligent as I am. It's okay.
Oh, okay. There you go. So the only advice I have is that you have to do this fake. Think of Adrian Veidt in Watchmen, maybe as my favorite example.
Yeah.
So the way that he seems smart is Alan Moore creates the world where everything Adrian Veidt has wanted to happen happens. So, you know, of course, the thing about playing a player with 18 intelligence really sucks, playing a character, that is. But when you're the GM having an, I mean, they have figured out how to do this in the abstract, and they've got everybody manipulated and everything has fallen into place, right? So you don't have to see all the hard work and make it believable. You believe it because every time they're like, but of course, I've already manipulated the lieutenant of the local town guard, and then they show up. Then the local town guard shows up just on cue, and then they're like, what do you want us to do, master? You know, like, so you can, as the GM, you show the surface, but you don't have to show the machinery underneath.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and one thing I immediately think of is just like, you know, obviously like magic and super science are things you can do for incredibly high intelligence characters. But exactly what Julian was saying, it makes me think of, did you guys watch Battlestar Galactica?
Yes. Yeah.
I did. And I loved that series. Did you guys watch those horrible movies they made afterwards? Like Battlestar Galactica, The Plan?
No, I did not.
So Battlestar Galactica, The Plan, it was a movie about what the Cylons' plan had been the whole time. And basically what it is they show a bunch of footage from the TV show and then had the actors who played the Cylon basically step around a corner and be like, I was there the whole time, is basically like how they did that. But like, you can kind of do the same thing where it's like your villain can be behind everything that's happening. And that can be a way of kind of illustrating how brilliant they are. You can also give them ways to get out of any situation. Do you have your NPC with an int 18 person cornered in their own lair? Great. Now suddenly they have a secret door they can escape out of there.
Right.
It's not on the map.
They,
too bad.
They would have thought it of is that. Now. They would have thought of that, clearly.
They would have thought of that. So now you give it to them. I will also add that if you're dealing with somebody whose intelligence is even beyond the mortal ken, then at this point, their motives are going to be incomprehensible to us, like ridiculous people. So the thing that I like to think of is the wizard in the Charwoman's shadow, who his dealings are happening on a level that goes, he doesn't care about gold. He doesn't care about love. Like, his interests are extra planar. So the things that he needs and he wants are beyond our understanding. So hell, at that point, you can just have a random table that you roll on to see like what he's going to do next if you want, because like, it's going to seem so bizarre to the players because it's incomprehensible to them. So I think you have a couple of ways you can approach this.
I love that a lot. Like a lot. I mean, so many times the players are like, oh, maybe this is their motivation. And you're thinking, well, I mean, I guess it could be. And that works for a stupid goon. But if it's a big, bad, evil wizard, they should have higher intelligence and as not loftier goals, but just other goals that aren't necessarily a quick leap of player intellect. No, I like that a lot.
Also, one last thing. I imagine most player NPCs that have an int of 18 are not going to fight to the death.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
They're going to
try
to escape.
Yeah.
And I know I struggle with that too. I always, like, in the middle of combat, it's hard for me to remember to do morale checks or think about who's going to run. I really challenge you to constantly, as the GM, be thinking, how can I protect my life when you're playing that high int character? Because that's what they're going to be thinking.
a really high end character would plan for that kind of thing too. And like, if he would, if he knew these adventurers were coming after them, he would, you know, research them, know who their family is, for example, and have kidnapped one of them already, so that when the, you know, the adventurers are fighting him, he can go, you know, let's stop here for a second because I have your mother in the back room and I'm going to kill her.
So make them more evil too.
Oh, make them more evil too. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I love my villains to be really evil. So,
but the trick of it is it's a little, you know, running that guy is almost too easy, right? Because you can always be like, and he's got your mother. And then you're like, but I didn't even know I had a mother. I'm an orphan. You know, I mean, it's like,
well, yeah, I mean, you have to know your players' characters too, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Right. But the GM has limitless ammo, and you know, so you got to be a little bit, you know, but yeah, it's a never ending question.
Now, that's actually a really great question.
I feel like kind of building what Julian was just saying, like, yeah, you can just pull things out of the air if you want. But I think rather than maybe pulling things out of the air, if the evil NPC with an intelligence of 18 is aware of you and is aware of the fact that you are working against him or her, then that NPC is now going to be doing everything in their power to take you down.
Oh, yeah.
And if your players are not playing carefully and are not being discreet in their actions, then there is likely going to be major ramifications in the storyline because
that,
of that.
That NPC will have done their research.
Yes. Yeah.
So Moriarty it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's when you get into high level. I mean, I've got the high level second ed games back in, you know, college, where the guys, they spent sessions just casting whatever spell that protects from scry over and over again. and they were basically just casting their wardings and scry proofs and everything over and over while they planned in a room. Like, because,
wow.
You know, so then you can probably go too far the other way as well. So, but if you're really, really good, like, you really put this elaborately. I mean, this is not something I could probably ever pull off, but there is that Michael Curtis quiet engineer type who's pulling all the strings from day one, right? And you, because to really do it awesome, it has to be fair. You got to lay out all the pieces where the characters can see them. And then in, you know, episode 10 or 20 or whatever, suddenly it all comes down like dominoes, and they were like, oh, I saw it the whole, I could, now I look back and I see exactly the master plan, and, you know, I can't believe we walked straight in. Like, if you could pull that off, that's pretty awesome. Then they believe you have an intelligence of 18.
Fantastic. All right. Great question, Nacho. Thanks so much to everyone else. If you have any questions, and I promise we'll try to get through, you know, the next couple of months soon, send them on over to theband@spellburn.com. And now for our mighty Dieter.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
Huh, so you want to play rough, eh? Well, take this!
Mighty Deeds.
I see what you did there.
It was all like spontaneous and stuff too. I hadn't even planned that one.
Ooh,
I know, right?
It's even better that way.
Unscripted brilliance.
All right, Dieter, we're going to start with the typical interview, you know, questionnaire.
All right.
How'd you get your start in gaming?
Like a lot of DCC people probably did, I started with D&D back when I was like 9 years old. I think the first one I had was the Red Box D&D. So I played that. I played that for a little while before I, you know, jumped to AD&D before I was advanced. I played AD&D for many, many years. Basically high school was pretty much, all role playing with occasional homework. And that was pretty much how I grew up. So,
okay. So this being a DCC show, the next question would normally be, when did you first get started with DCC? But you have a history that predates that.
I, I got started with DCC before DCC was even published.
Yeah. So how did you end up getting on the Goodman side of things?
Okay, that's kind of an interesting story. It is in a kind of indirect roundabout way, it is Keith Baker's fault.
Okay.
That I work for Goodman. Because he was doing a bunch of writing for Goodman for a while, and then this Eberron thing happened that you might have heard about. And so he was in the middle of working on a couple of things for Goodman when he had to start writing Eberron. And to help him finish those things for Goodman, he tapped his friend, Matt Sprengler, who also happened to be my friend from college. So that's how Matt got into writing for Goodman. And then later on, Matt brought me in to help him with Dragon Mech. So that's kind of how that all happened. And then I just started doing stuff for Goodman after that. And when DCC came around, he was asking for some help with that, and I was there. So I'm like, hey, I'll help with that. Because what else am I going to do? Tell Joseph no?
I mean, well. So Dragon Mech, we're talking about 2006 publication date? 2007?
No, it was a little earlier than that, because I think I wrote for the first Dragon Mech book that Joseph didn't write himself, I think. And that was about 2005, I think.
Okay.
So it was a little earlier than that.
Now, you have mentioned many, many times on social media, etc., that Dragon Mech deserves more exposure, more play, and that it could even fit with DCC. So give us a pitch.
Yeah, I think Dragon Mech is one of the coolest settings for D&D ever created.
So pitch it to us.
And so the pitch is, it is fantasy, but with steam-powered mechs. But it is not steampunk in any way. It is like straight out of the player's handbook, but with steam-powered mechs added. If that makes sense. Like there's none of that Victorian kind of hoo-ha whatever that steampunk has.
Okay.
And these are not like fancy mechs at all. They're like big, bulky, like
but are they like
awkward
individual, like an individual gets in them kind of mech?
Well, the smaller ones are powered by individuals, but most of them are actually have crews, like entire crews, and they run anywhere from like individual small mechs up to city mechs, which are literally thousands of people living in a mech.
Okay.
So it's kind of, and the whole reason. Like this is a long pitch, not an elevator pitch, clearly. But the whole reason for that is because of the lunar rains, which in this setting, the moon has drifted closer and closer to the planet. And as it does, it has started breaking apart. And every night when the moon rises, the planet is blasted with storms of lunar dust that makes living on the surface nearly impossible. So eventually these mechs were invented, created so that people could go back to living on the surface, except they live in mechs instead of in villages.
And is it human centric like most other?
It is human. The main two races are humans and dwarves. Like dwarves, it might almost be dwarf centric, actually, because the dwarves are the ones that originally invented the mechs. So the other aspect of the setting is that with this, the moon is also inhabited by weird lunar creatures, and these lunar creatures, these aliens, lunar aliens are trying to take over the planet, except that you can really kind of see some of the seeds of DCC in Dragon Mech, in that these lunar creatures are like chaos incarnate. Like they make no sense to human minds whatsoever. Their plans are inscrutable.
So their intelligence is 18.
Their intelligence is, it might be 18, it might be 5, you don't know. like it doesn't even relate to human intelligence.
It might be the letter P.
Right, there you go.
intriguing.
And it may just be that I also just have nostalgia for it because it was the first thing that I ever published as a game writer. So
It sounds pretty crazy. I would I'd love to see. It's in D20 though, right?
It's in D20. Like the first books for it were actual D&D 3.0, and then
yeah,
became 3.5 quickly after that.
I did manage to dig up an archived product link from the Wayback Machine that takes you back to one of the old Goodman Games pages on it.
Ooh, exciting.
So we'll be sure and post that with the liner notes this time around.
Hmm.
Cool. Yeah. So I've been pushing for Joe to resurrect Dragon Mech for quite a while, and it still hasn't quite happened yet. But
well, now looking at other things that you may have written for, you know, going on ye old Googles, you show up on DCC number 29.
Yes, I did write. That was the compilation of first to third level adventures, a big hardback book. That was the first adventure I ever had published.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, it's okay. I'll be honest. It's not awesome. It's got some good things in it, but it's not awesome.
But then Etherscope popped up.
Etherscope. I did a little bit of work on one of the Etherscope books. It was not much. I wrote like 2,000 words in The Great Metropolis. That was it.
And what is the Book of Whispers?
Now that's something that's pretty cool. I like. It's not DCC related or Goodman related. That's one of the few non-Goodman things I've done. It's for a game called Never Going Home, which is kind of a horror, Lovecraftian horror version of World War I, where these creatures from other planes start breaking through to this world, and you know, soldiers go insane and have access to magic and that kind of stuff. So I wrote one adventure in the Book of Whispers, which incidentally, if you pick it up and read it, you will recognize that the main NPC he's named after one of the DCC artists. But that's all I'm going to say.
Did you Kovacs
it? You have to go look at it if you want to find out who.
Wow, what a tease.
Also, I'd like to point out that I'm flipping through the Dragon Mech PDF right now, and I'm noticing the thing about clerics. And
it says
few clerics have survived the catastrophe unscathed. And later it says they receive spells only when their deities had the strength and design focus to spare. Each day the cleric completes an hour of supplication, check to see if she receives spells. This is resolved with a wisdom check. So each day you might not even get any spells.
In addition to the lunar creatures are at war with the terrestrial creatures, the lunar gods are actively fighting the terrestrial guy. And sometimes the gods are too busy fighting to give you your spells.
Take that, clerics.
Wow. Wow.
That was a long way to go just for a cleric dig, Jeff.
Hey, I'm just saying. Like,
I mean, you downloaded Dragon Mech for that?
So what about Etherscope? Is it like a steampunk thing?
Yeah, Etherscope is more steampunk for sure.
It's a cipher system for steampunk.
You've actually played Etherscope, haven't you, Jen? Is that?
I took a look through it. Bob actually ran it for one of our first free RPG days.
Yeah, it's a lot more actual steampunk than Dragon Mech is, because you have like cybernetic stuff and it's very very Victorian in flavor.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay, so circling back around, we have DCC.
We have DCC. Yes. So DCC. Like I said, I was just part of this Goodman Games group that was. Like after the fourth edition fiasco, Joe was deciding to do his own thing, and at one point, like, he emailed a whole bunch of us asking for ideas about project. Like, he had most of it already written, I think, but he had a few holes to fill, and so he emailed a bunch of us and was just like, "What? Give me some ideas here," or I remember being involved in a discussion about dwarves and what makes dwarves special. And I think I was the one who first suggested that dwarves should have some shield thing that makes them special.
Naturally.
I was thinking they should be defensive fighters and warriors are offensive fighters, but it turned into a shield bash. So what? I don't know. Whatever.
It's cool though. I dig it.
I didn't have any specific ideas about how it should work, but not
the gold smelling.
No, that was not my idea, but that's an awesome idea. And that's my favorite thing about dwarves. Because yeah, you can lead parties anywhere you want to if there's a dwarf in the group.
So you're listed as one of the writers of the DCC core book. Is there anything specific that you contributed to that we would recognize?
I contributed 200 words to that thick tome. I wrote, I think, maybe like 7 to 10 of the entries on the Mercurial Magic table. That was me.
All right. Do you remember what one of them was?
I can remember a few of them. Ravenous, where you get hungry and have a person. That was me.
That tracks.
Let's see. I don't know. Without actually looking at the table, I'm not sure I can remember it.
What about Spell Killer? That's my favorite.
Oh no, that was not me. I was still thinking a lot smaller than some of these other people probably were. So.
I did have somebody walk out of a store game once because of that.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of great.
Yeah, so most of mine are around the middle of the table where it's not really extreme.
Yeah, so Dieter, you predate the nickname for Joseph of the Dark Master.
Oh, yes, that's a story, yeah. Well, it's not really a very interesting story, but it is. I do know why he's called the Dark Master.
Is this going to be the real story now?
This is the real story.
Okay.
If that's what you want, I can make up a more exciting story if you're interested in that. But the real story is Joseph asked me to be his social media guy at first. So I kind of built the DCC social media community on Facebook and all that. And one of the very early posts I made was something about the Dark Master commands you to, you know, go out and get your friends to like the DCC page or whatever. And enough people do it, you'll get this free product or whatever. And my intention was is that the Dark Master was someone who was, you know, the shadow behind Joseph even, but like he was Joseph's patron. But people took it that Joe was the Dark Master, and it just kind of caught on. So.
Nice.
Since we're talking nicknames, I gotta ask, dude, your GG Joe nickname.
that actually comes from another social media post I made. It was on the website. I was writing ad copy for the TPK tissues.
Oh,
which
God.
You may remember.
Those are brilliant. Yeah.
And I said something like they're coated with the soothing slime from a musk goblin. For reasons I can't even understand myself, I linked the text musk goblin to a picture of myself. So
nice.
I just went with that. It was silly little thing.
So tell us about the photo shoot at GaryCon 2014.
I
feel like the picture reminds me of something. What is that?
The year before at Gen Con was the year I dressed up as Hugh. And I guess that kind of gave Joseph the idea, I guess, that he wanted to do a cover, sort of like some of the old Judges Guild and other ones where they had live people actually dressed up and stuff. So he decided he wanted to do that.
Okay.
And a bunch of us at GaryCon that year got dressed up in fantasy outfits and we just kind of did a photo shoot outside. And the thing I remember most about it is that it was in Wisconsin in like March.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's still pretty cold outside. And Michael Curtis and I were both barefoot. And by the time we got inside, we could not feel our toes.
Yeah, that's no.
Not the brightest.
No.
So yeah, I think in the actual book, I think there are more pictures from the photo shoot, if I recall.
Hmm.
Or in some book, those pictures showed up. But
Gen Con program guide, yeah.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah. In the 2014 Gen Con program.
Yeah, the one that the cover is on. Yeah.
Now, no, it's reminiscent of the old Judges Guild stuff.
It made it onto a T-shirt too, but I can't for the life of me dig a photo of that up.
Yeah.
There is a photo of me wearing the T-shirt and holding up the book from probably the Gen Con after that.
Ooh, doubly recursive.
Right.
And it's like and Job? It was
Job. Job was the goat cultist. Yes.
That you're swinging the sword at.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Job is still a goat cultist. It's just
right. Yeah, it was not a big acting stretch.
But I am the only goat cultist.
There you go. No, I'm part of your cult, Jeff.
Oh well, thank you. Aww. And if I start my own company, Goadman Games, will you come to work for me?
Absolutely.
And then we can call you the Dork Master.
Thank you, Julian. I needed that one. Well, hey, since we're talking about you and Goad being off in your own little corner there, what's your favorite Appendix N piece?
Me?
See how I segued that one?
Nice. That was nice. I'm a big Moorcock fan. Like Elric, Corum, Hawkmoon. Those are my favorites by far. No question.
Hmm.
Is there any Appendix N that you've read that you're just like, this sucked?
Honestly, a lot of it.
Yeah.
Could you be more specific?
I like the ideas that are presented in a lot of them, but honestly, it's not really my style of fiction. Like, I like the more modern fiction where you really get into the characters' heads. Let's see. I'm trying to think of if there's anything that I really particularly didn't like.
For me, Frederick Brown, Martians Go Home.
Oh, I haven't tried Frederick Brown yet.
Did not like that one at all.
Yeah. I think for me it's the Complete Enchanter. I'm not a Elsbrig de Camp guy.
Oh, see that was one that I enjoyed a little more, actually.
I do enjoy the Complete Enchanter. I think those are fun. They're not great, but they're fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to get killed. Lynch for this, but the Dying Earth stuff I just did not
well
really...
Dieter, thanks for coming on the show. It's been nice having you here. Yeah. Okay,
right. It's an acquired taste. I mean, it took a while.
We just edit that out, Jeff.
I hear the DCC version of it is great though.
Okay, here I'm gonna ask you a different question. So Dieter, what's your all-time favorite Appendix N? Okay, so now I have all I need for editing. So okay. They might hate me for this, but Dying Earth.
Dying Earth.
So tell us about Not in Kansas Anymore. I was just rereading that tonight, and that's a lot of fun. I've never run it, but
thank you. Yes. Like I'm kind of proud. That's one of my, actually, of all the things I've written, that's probably my favorite. It kind of came from the idea. Well, like a lot of Appendix N lit, there's the trope of the person from our Earth who goes to a fantasy world, and I felt like that was something that DCC didn't really have yet at that time. So that was kind of where the adventure idea came from. And originally, it also kind of flipped the whole adventure script in that you started off in the middle of the fortress with the battle against the big boss and then escaped. But oddly enough, that turned out to be kind of anticlimactic. So I switched it around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Which Wampler did sort of set up me to do in Hive of the Overmind. He kind of, there is that reversal sort of giant ass battle at the end. Well, anyway, at the beginning. Anyway.
Same kind of thing. Like you still start in the middle of the fortress and there's a pretty big battle but I had to have an actual climactic battle at the end too.
Yeah.
Apparently that actually makes things exciting.
For anybody who isn't familiar with this adventure, It is a funnel, and you have 70s occupations, 1970s.
Earth, yes.
Yes. So did you make all of those tables as well?
Yeah, yeah. All of those tables were mine as well.
No references to weed? I mean,
well, the 70s. I mean, he managed to make it family friendly.
That's true. I didn't even think of that because, you know, while I was alive in the 70s myself, I was like 7. So I wasn't really doing that much, you know.
Not that much,
but
right?
you know, if you don't like the rules, change them. That's DCC, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I've had so many new players come in, and that was the very first thing that they played, and they just absolutely chewed that up. And
that's awesome.
I mean, the occupation table alone is what sucked them into the game, and then all of a sudden they're buying the books, they're buying the dice, and they're running for their own groups. So
on that occupation table,
a hit.
I think the mime is my favorite, although I've never had it come up in a game that I actually ran. So
I've run for the mimes,
and then because it's the 70s, the astrology table as well.
Yeah instead of the birth augur table, there's the astrology table. Yes,
very nice.
Yeah, the two mimes and the truck driver were probably the best combination.
You had two mimes in one game.
I was gonna say, this sounds like the setup for a joke. So right. two mimes and a truck driver.
So we should
absolutely.
We should mention this is found in the 2016 Gen Con program guide, which also
that's the only place it is.
And it also contains something we were talking about earlier. I believe doesn't it have the black feather blade also?
Oh, does it?
I don't remember.
I'm not sure where that one comes from.
Maybe that's a different one, but I thought I saw.
Because the 2016 has the Warden cover.
Oh, no, maybe that's the 2015 one.
Has the Wizard Van. I think that's the one that the Black Feather Blade is in.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's the 2015 one.
All of these are included in the Warden cover. In the current Humble Bundle. I'll say it correctly, I promise.
Humble Bundle.
Yeah, I think Humble Bundle has it on for like the next 20-some days, so probably by the time this airs, you can still get it.
Fingers crossed. Sorry, everybody. I'm a little behind on editing.
No worries, man. But all of the PDFs for an insane price. And yeah, absolutely well worth it. Even if you already have the publications. I'm loving the fact that I'd be able to actually print the tables for the occupations for Not in Kansas anymore, so that I can give out multiple copies to the table. That will be fantastic.
What, you don't have a PDF of the
of Not in Kansas? That year, I don't know.
Oh,
I don't remember.
It also has an amazing, really cool, full of art interview with Errol Otis.
There's a lot of cool things in that.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. A lot of it in color. It's really freaking sweet, actually. Anyway,
And the map for Not in Kansas is awesome, too. I especially like the little drawing of the critter in the room, and that was my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Didn't I send you my hand-drawn version of that? I sent that to you, didn't I? Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, the map that appears in the module is very much like the one that I drew, except better. So, yeah.
I love the there's a mechanism in there of the, as you're trying to flee the bad guy's hideout, essentially, right? The lava is creeping after you, so that there's something driving the PCs.
Oh, yeah. So
the action.
I should mention that my friend Matt, who got me into writing for Goodman in the first place, also did some of the writing on this adventure, helped me out. And that was one of his contributions to it. The lava table was his.
So you don't just stay in that first room forever.
Right.
And ever. Yeah. No,
which I've never personally had to use it when I ran, because I know the players just get into it and they're like, oh my God, we got to get out of here. But so have you ever used it when you ran it, Jen, or?
Yeah, because otherwise they would take forever trying to loot everything that was down in that first level. They wouldn't worry if somebody actually got away from the battle. They were just so concerned with, we're brand new here. We have no gear. Let's grab stuff. You've got this going on. You've got this many actions. You know, you can do something and then go.
I've never actually heard how it went when anyone but me has run it before. I have my way of running it, and I know what happens when I run it. But until a month ago, I think Brendan sent me a report that someone else ran it, and that was the first I'd ever heard of an actual report of what happened when someone else ran it.
I had one group actually get home the prescribed way. I had another group charm baby critter that was there that could fly. And they escaped out the mountainside.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It was one of those where, you have to just go with it.
You just go with it. Yes, I understand this. Yep.
But so, how many TPKs?
For me, there none.
I don't think I've ever had a TPK when I ran it either. Actually, the only adventure I have ever had a TPK when I was running is Brendan's Hole in the Sky.
Really?
That's the only adventure in all my years of gaming that I've ever had a TPK on.
Really?
The only one I ever had was Grimtooth's Museum.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Job.
I've had many.
Yeah,
but you're mean, so.
So, Dieter, I just have a couple more quick questions for you.
Sure.
How you're doing the music column now for the Goodman website?
Oh, yeah. It was a limited series kind of thing, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, like I've always been very interested in music in general, and there has always been this kind of relationship between DCC and music. So I just decided to delve into that for a few columns on the website.
Okay. Any in the works?
There's still two more that are kind of planned, but they both require a lot of research, which I just haven't done. So whether they actually happen or not, we'll see.
Do you have any other projects in the works?
Not really. Not right now. I've kind of been taking this year off.
I don't think anyone blames you this year.
Relaxing and just kind of, trying to recharge a little bit.
And running a bookstore.
Well, yeah, kind of running a bookstore. It's all online right now, but I've been looking for an actual retail location to put it.
That's pretty awesome.
So yeah, if you need books, hit me up.
Any Appendix N?
Just a few right now. Just a few. I have a big collection of Appendix N. I'm just not sure I'm ready to sell them right now. So yeah, I'm sure you understand how it is.
All too keenly. Right, Jeff?
I mean, I'm marking all mine up, so they're not really resellable.
You are a monster.
It's true. I get all these first edition paperbacks, and then I grab my pink highlighter and my black pen.
Oh my God. That hurts. That hurts. Yeah.
Yeah, right here, here's my Manly Wade Wellman, Sherlock Holmes, War of the Worlds, and we just open it up. And
Ouch.
I mean, do you have dog-eared pages, too?
I mean, I don't, but I might as well at that point. But my defense is I am spreading so much love of the genre with my other show. No,
that's fair. That's fair.
If you just
did it because you felt like it, that would be another matter. Yeah.
I although each episode ends up destroying one copy in the world, it also spreads so much love of the genre. Well,
and every copy you destroy makes all the other copies that much more valuable.
Exactly. So it's all for a better cause.
We booksellers thank you, Jeff.
Well, it's getting thick and deep.
All right, Julian, do you have anything else for Dieter?
Is there any part of, is there any kind of setting in DCC that you especially gravitate to as a player or judge or just that you enjoy reading or whatever?
I love the Shutter Mountains stuff. Like, yeah, that's, I love it.
Speaking
love,
of manly weight.
Yeah. Yeah, actually one of the music columns that requires some research I haven't done yet is all about the songs in the Silver John stories and et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So, wait, what is that?
Oh, that's cool.
What is that?
It is a copy of Long Lost Friend, which is referenced by Silver John.
Oh, nice.
Ew, speaking of booksellers. Yeah.
Right? You want to sell it? Is that what you're saying?
No, but, you know, I'd be happy to be a research monkey for you.
Oh, okay. All right.
In my copious Fantastic. Spare time. Yeah.
Well, so here we go. So Shutter Mountain's the sequel. Maybe we'll get a not in Tennessee anymore type thing.
Not in the Appalachia anymore?
Yeah.
No, actually, my kind of one of my dream projects that is probably never going to happen. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt or five. I would love to record a CD of songs from the Shutter Mountains.
I'm in.
Like Appalachian stuff, but talking about elves and dwarves and witch liquor and, you know.
Wow, that would be pretty cool.
But yeah, it probably won't happen because, you know.
Yeah. Never say never. I've got scratch tracks for a couple others from the sailing genre, so why not?
If you do it, it will happen, but if you don't do it, it will not happen.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Such yeah. wise words from you guys.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it is getting thick. Okay, so.
That's that's a great example of how you play a character yeah. with a wisdom of 18.
Yeah.
You don't have a wisdom
See?
Of 18.
Exactly. That's right. And a wisdom of 18 and a tumbler full of Lagavulin 18.
Oh,
or 16.
Yeah.
Six, I'll settle for 16.
Going around full circle so many times, I'm getting dizzy. So email us at thebandatspellburn.com, leave iTunes reviews, send us some fun little bumpers, find us on social media, you know, varying flavors. You know, I'm going to throw into this outro mix. There's a couple of Patreons for people that we know and love. You know, go hit Michael Curtis, go hit Mike Evans, hit the Appendix End podcast on Patreon. You know, all of them have some fun, cool stuff. If you have a Patreon, let us know, because, you know, we'd love to help our friends in the community.
Mm. I have a bookstore.
Dear, well, what's it called?
It's called The Wizardarium, which incidentally is named for the DCC module.
Oh, a little yes, love to
The Wizardarium of Calibraxis. Amazing.
Nice. Yes. Very
also,
nice.
Also, for those who are interested, since I do all the editing for both Spellburn and the Appendix N Book Club, all of the money that is earned with the Appendix N Book Club's Patreon is also used to take care of Spellburn's editing needs as well.
You know,
So that's something to keep in mind.
I'm not going
to
call you a pimp, Jeff, but nicely done.
That money is well spent on two podcasts.
Why do you think I include it? So thank you, listeners, for joining us. Thank you, Dieter, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we're sorry it took
it's about
so long,
time.
Man. I know. All right, guys, have a great night and game on.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. Theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.